Welcome back to the Ottawa studios of Inside My Canoe Head. It is a beautiful, wonderful day today. I hope you're all enjoying yourself and thinking about vacation, which is why I thought today would be a great time to go back to some basic information about preparedness. And let's talk about preparedness on the move. So sit back, grab yourself a beverage, two hands on the steering wheel, look forward, whatever it may be. Here we go. I don't know. I seem to be liking these electric guitar riffs of late. I just love the sound of a good old-fashioned electric guitar. Listen, I hope you're all enjoying yourself. Thanks again for all your feedback. I keep saying this every week. I appreciate it. A couple of new subscribers, new people banging up on the newsletters. Listen, we aim to be your source for accurate, relevant, and logical preparedness information here at Inside My Canoe Head. We're on all socials. We're on YouTube. We're getting better. You are an early adopter if you're joining us here. So if this content is not exactly what you're looking for, it is up to you to reach out and tell us what we need to do better. So drop over insidemycanoehead.ca to check out everything that we are up to. All right, today, preparedness on the move. What does that mean? Well, listen, unless you're living in a bunker, unless you're barricaded inside your home for some reason, you go out. You leave the house, you integrate to some degree with society. It may just be tolerating the fact that they exist, or you may actually be going out and enjoying a bunch of things in society. Preparedness just has considerations. It's basically, what are the things that I need to think about when I leave home? So we're going to break this down into local, regional, and a foreign country for you today. Starting local. Okay. Frame it in the idea that you're going to have to walk home. It's really the simple way I look at it. Listen, if your car breaks down, CAA is not available, I don't know, or AAA, wherever you may live, just think about left my house, I went to someplace, the world goes pear-shaped, something goes wrong, things, can I walk home? Obviously, I know my alternate. I can call a cab, I can call an Uber, I can call a whatever, I can jump on a bus. Those are great things to know. Know your local bus routes, right? And it's really simple, and the knowledge doesn't take anything. I, here in Ottawa, Ontario, have an app called OC Transpo. That's our local transpo. It's actually really well done. I can hop on there, turn on location, say I'm here and I want to go here, leaving now. And it will calculate based upon all the routes and all the bus systems around me and give me a series of options from where I am, what stop I have to walk to, showing me on a map how I got to walk somewhere. It's brilliant, right? I have a tool to get home. But guess what I also have to have? I have to have bus fare, right? And here it's like $3.85 or something like that to take a bus ride. Or you can get the local Presto card and tap it. But if you don't have a Presto card, just make sure you have a $5 bill tucked into your pocket. And you drop $5, you're on the bus, you get home. But for preparedness, we kind of think about walking home. And I say this because generally, if you're 30 to 50 kilometers per day is what you can walk, the average human being in reasonably good shape will walk at 5 kilometers an hour in clear terrain and clear weather. You can start dropping that back. So if you're walking in inclement weather along the sidewalks, you're probably only going to be doing 2 to 3 kilometers per hour. If you're walking through the trees, let me tell you, on a couple of decades of army and backcountry experience, you're not going any faster than 1 kilometer an hour in the trees. And that's if you're getting some pretty good lanes. I've walked through some evergreen and some forests in eastern Canada, and you're getting far less than 1 kilometer an hour to get through that. So dress for the weather. I know our parents told us that all the time, but it's true. Look yourself in the mirror. You're headed out. Can I walk home the 4 kilometers from the mall if the car breaks down in what I'm wearing? If not, should I be wearing that? I mean, if you're going out for an event and you're dressed up in semi-formal or formal attire, obviously you're not intending to walk home in a party dress, right? So maybe you just have a set of comfortable shoes. No jokes aside, you know, have a water bottle and a snack. But in reality, you can walk for 6 hours and not need any water or food. Your body will be fine. It may be a bit uncomfortable. So it's not like you have to have this go bag of stuff just in case you got to walk home. But don't overthink it. Like, seriously, you're in a society. The society's not collapsing. We're not talking about the end of the world as we know it, nuclear EMP attack or anything ridiculous about that. That's just like, if you like a granola bar, it's never a bad idea to have a granola bar in your purse or in your man purse or in your otherwise known as man purse called cargo pants, whatever it may be. Just to have that in there. And I mean, in my car, I carry water, right? I just keep a, or I try to remember to, I don't always, but I try to remember to keep a flat of those 500 mil bottles in the car. It's just never a bad idea. Grab a couple of those and head for a walk if you have to. Really, there's not a lot of considerations like that. You're going to have your cell phone. The reality is if you're just able to do that, if you have comfortable shoes and you're dressed for the weather, guess what? You're just gonna be able to navigate your way home, right? But the idea is, if you had to walk home, and I did this when I was a university student several years ago, and the campus was 23 kilometers from my home. So if the bus system broke down, I'm not getting an Uber because I live in a city of a million and everybody else has already gotten the Ubers and every taxi cab available. And I came down to the university by bus, which means I didn't have a car. I'm not going to go try to find a local car rental agency to get one. I'm going to put on my big boy shoes and I'm going to put on my big boy clothes and I'm going to walk home. So did I have the right clothing, water bottle, and food to walk home from my university? And the answer was always yes, right? I just made sure that in my university backpack, that in my laptop, top and the other essentials, I had a water bottle in there, reusable water bottle. I'm a bit funky. Mine had a filter and everything on it. You don't have to go to that extent. And a couple of Clif bars. At the time, I loved Clif bars. So I had a couple of white chocolate macadamia nut Clif bars. You know what I mean. You know, they're the best in my bag. And then I just could walk home. Never happened to me. But I was ready to do it. So what about regional travel? So regional travel we'll consider is anything outside walking distance. You know, you're going to go somewhere, you're going to go to the next town over, you're 150 kilometers or 100 miles away, visiting friends or relatives. You're not packing up, putting on your comfortable shoes and walking home. But you still need to be dressed for the travel, right? Let's be serious. Going out in high heels to an event 100 miles away, it's not a bad idea, but I wouldn't go without some side of side bag that had comfortable clothes in, a sweatsuit, a rain jacket, and a pair of sneakers. Never goes wrong anywhere. Where are you going to stay in the area? So it's just situational awareness, right? It's just having a look around. If my plans get changed. So for example, if I drive to a party 150 kilometers away, I'm probably going to be staying there. So I'm going to be thinking through, how am I going to stay? Where am I going to stay? What are my options available? Do I know a person there? Is there a home? If I had to get a shelter, what hotels are available? You know what I mean? That type of research. How am I going to stay there? And then you can get up the next day and figure out. When your regional travel and your travel plans change, you're probably looking at a couple of days hanging out there. What does that look like, right? Where are you going to stay? Where could you get some food? Where are you going to secure transportation? Is there a rental car place in that? You know, it's not societal collapse again. And we're not talking about massive failure of anything. We're simply talking about life happens, right? Life happens. Is there a bus? Can you grab a local plane? Could you rent a car and pay the one-way fee? Like, how would you get your butt home if your original mode of travel going to this place was no longer available? So if you have a car and your car broke down, right? And a local mechanic says, yeah, I can fix it. I need some parts. It's going to be about a week. You're in a different town, not in your home. You're a couple hundred kilometers, a couple hundred miles from home. You're still in your own country, but now your car is not available for a week. You're either staying there for a week and waiting for the car, which means, is that the time you want to figure out where your options are? Or you're going to have to find an alternate transportation to get back to your home, to get back to where your stuff is, to get back to life, and to carry on. These are normal things that happen to people, right? Not everybody has a perfectly working car that never breaks down. So if your car breaks down in a foreign town, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to just wing it? Well, some people do. In preparedness, we try to minimize the winging and try to do more of the thinking so that when things go pear-shaped, life is a little easier. So regional is just all about that. It's a likelihood that you're going to lose access to your mode of transportation and that you're going to have to find an alternate to get back, right? Is there even bus service to that town? Well, ask yourself that before you go, right? So then you're not even worried about trying to look for local bus lines and Googling it. Imagine if Google wasn't available, but that's a different conversation altogether. The last one and the one that's going to take the most time to talk about is a foreign country, right? So this is a plane or a car destination. I live in Canada, so if I drive to one of my favorite places in the U.S., shout out to Ocean City, Maryland. Listen, I'm not walking home a couple thousand or 1,000 kilometers, right? Or 800 miles. This is not The Walking Dead, The Last of Us, or The End of Civilization, right? So I got to dress for the travel. Oh, well, look at that. That's no different. But the key to this is dress both for your destination and origin. If you're leaving Canada to get on a plane to go to Cuba to enjoy a summer a beautifully hot vacation, don't dress for Cuba when you leave home. Dress for Canada because you're going to be coming back in cold and horrible weather, and you're going to be coming back to the airport making the assumption that your car is available, making your assumption that the car starts and that it's not under 2 feet of snow. Et cetera, et cetera. If you land back in Canada and your car doesn't start and you're still in your flippy floppies because that's all you brought, it's February. It gets cold here, right? So that's not a smart idea. So make sure that when you're traveling internationally from one climate to another, that you travel dressed appropriately. You can change at destination. They do have bathrooms where you're going, right? You can change and stuff your hoodie and everything else away and save it for your return flight. We used to laugh, and you're hanging around the lobby of your resort. You could always tell the people that were headed out that day because they're the people in the morning that are dressed in jeans and long sleeve shirts at the resort because they're now putting on their travel clothes. Smart people, right? Another question I'm going to ask you is, where are you going to stay when the airline abandons you? And you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever, that would be a rare occurrence. It's actually fairly common now that your airline is going to abandon you in a foreign country. They're going to promise to rebook you. The resort has already resold your room, so the inbound traveler is expecting the room and they're going to get it, and you're not going to be able to stay there. So don't make the assumption that if your airline abandons you, that this resort will magically has any requirement whatsoever to keep you there. They don't, because your contract with them is for, say, 6 nights and 7 days. Somebody else is taking that room. The resort has no legal requirement whatsoever to keep you up in it. So your airline just abandoned you. You're standing there looking at your phone, Google, in the lobby with your vacation luggage in your hand and realize that your flight just got canceled. And you look all around you and there's no representative from the airline. Of course, the staff at the airport, at the hotel, they don't have a freaking clue what's going on, right? They work in a hotel. They're locals. They don't have access to airline data. Where are you going to go? Well, eventually, somebody is going to have to come for you. Somebody is going to have to find you a group place to stay. And I could go into the plethora of horror stories that people have gone into, roach-infested, bed-bug-infested, one-star places, bounced around, put in some pretty challenging security situations. So ask yourself the situational ahead of time, right? It's all about country SA. Do your research. What is the local security situation in the region you are going to? Mexico is a great place to visit. I have many friends who thoroughly enjoy Mexico, but there are places in Mexico where it is not good to be off the protection of the resort. And even if that offers any protection, that's a different. What languages are spoken? Do you have a Google Translate that can help you navigate something locally? Pivot to getting your cell phone. And this is preparedness, right? At some point in that journey, when your flight gets canceled, and are you just going to sit there and whine, bitch, and complain about the failure of the airline to get you home, to send planes for you, to put you up in appropriate accommodations? Or are you going to pivot, grab hold of the situation, take charge, and get you and your family's ass home? How would you do that? What airlines fly out of there? How can you get a connecting flight, right? For me in North America, to get out of a country that's having significant problems, I need to do one of two things. I need to land in the U.S. or I need to land in Canada. Because I know if I land in the U.S., I can scurry up a hotel pretty quick. And the U.S. airline system, as much as bemoaned it, it runs very, very well. It's a very competitive marketplace. And there's incredibly frequent flights. I can get my arse back to Canada pretty damn quick on an American airline. But or am I just going to sit in the country and get really mad on social media and see if I can get my 5 minutes of fame on my news interview and just complain about how I'm not being treated appropriately? Oh, don't worry. I'm going after the airline. But my first concern is not the airline. My first concern is getting myself back to my home country of Canada. So the other thing that that is important to understand is what could go wrong, right? And this is something we just think about the airline dumping people and it's happened, but what could go wrong? Now, if you're traveling to the Caribbean in hurricane season to get a good deal, then you probably should understand, what does a hurricane impact or threat look like? Now, a hurricane, the difference with those is you get lots and lots of warning. You see them, they're developed. NOAA and most of the Caribbean countries, SEDIMA and CARICOM, have some pretty damn fine, probably some of the best awareness, preparedness, education campaigns and plans related to how they're going to prepare the population and shelter the population from a hurricane strike. The best idea is to get the heck out of there before the hurricane. So how are you going to do that? If you have to depart early, if you have to take an earlier flight from your planned travel to escape a pending hurricane impact, what airlines are available to you? What does the cost look like? What are their destination options? You just do a little bit of situational awareness. But also think about the no notice, no lead disasters that happen. Think about earthquakes. Is this an earthquake zone? Is it potentially flood zones? Just think civil unrest is another one, but if that's actually a reason that could possibly happen, maybe that low price is too good of a deal for you to worry about. But just think about, listen, if there's an earthquake in this area, what could happen? What has happened? And if, you know, I'm a professional researcher, if I try to understand, the only way I know how to figure out what's going to likely occur in the future is to understand what occurred in the past. So if you're going to a place that hasn't had an earthquake in 300 years, okay, you're a smart person. You think about situational awareness and you plan. But if this is a place that gets hit fairly regularly, like the Ring of Fire along the Pacific Islands, New Zealand, that type of thing, you actually need to take some steps to think about, what does it look like? What is likely going to occur in the country? If you're in a modern developed country, you're probably going to get some pretty quick access to animalistic requirements. You're probably going to have to shelter there for a period of time without access to the internet. And then you're going to be like all foreigners. You're just going to fall in line and try to find your way out. You're just going to have to be prepared. Now, your preparedness is about understanding that and understanding that you're going to have to navigate it. So when it does happen, it sucks, right? But you're not losing your ever-loving mind and whining and complaining and just coming apart emotionally at the seam. You're like, yeah, all right. Guess I'm spending an extra week in Cuba. Guess I'm hanging around Dominican here and we're going to deal with this earthquake, right? You're not losing your mind because you thought through it. And our last point, linked directly to that idea, is plan. Think about what could go wrong and how would you navigate this. Planning and thinking ahead of events is the key pillar to preparedness, right? It's your secret weapon. It's your thoughts and ideas determined in a time of peace and calm. If we think about a military reference, soldiers and drills, right? Everybody seems to, you know, when bad things happen, people rise to the occasion, and that's the phrase. Well, in reality, research tells us that people don't rise to the occasion. They fall to their level of training. And this happens all of the time in military drills, right? So soldiers are just not naturally brilliantly aware of the world around them. They go through significant types of training. So when you're outside and you come under effective enemy fire, you have a natural reaction. You drill. You've gone through this. You've practiced this hundreds of times, right? When I say the phrase double tap, dash down, crawl, sight, reserve, fire, move, I haven't been in combat operations for well over a decade, but I clearly remember the exact series of events that need to occur when I come under effective enemy fire. So when it happens, I will do what I'm supposed to do, and the people around me in my platoon or squad or whatever it may be will do exactly what they're expected to do, because we've trained this 100 times. Preparedness is no different. When you think about all the things that could go wrong, and then think a little bit about how you might navigate those, when they go wrong, you're already a step ahead of everybody else because you've already thought through the situation, which means you will have a far higher, greater level of emotional control. I call that the power of preparedness. And listen, and when I talk about planning and thinking about things ahead of time, I'm not talking about a several hour session with a whole bunch of encyclopedias. I don't think anybody does that anymore anyhow. But the point is it's just becoming aware of your situation. It's becoming aware of where you're going, gathering all of the necessary information to be successful, and then going out and rocking an incredible life. Because that's the purpose of preparedness, to provide you with that skill set and that training. All right, thank you very much for joining us this week on Inside My Canoe Head. I hope your travels are problem-free, but welcome to the world when they're not. It's just take the time to make sure that you're good to go and you can make the necessary decisions in times of calm and peace, and then don't let your emotions get the better of you, and please don't be that whiny little you-know-what on TV that their world comes apart and everybody owes them everything. Don't be that person. Quietly pivot, take command, take control, get yourself back to a period of safety, and then take all the actions that are available to you to get your money back, to go after the source of the problem, but you're doing so from a period of peace and calm in your residence, laughing, having your favorite beverage. So drop any hints or any comments you have at jeff@preparednesslabs.ca. Hit us up on socials. We've got a lot more coming to you, and soon we will have the first book in our series called Preparedness Simplified, The Beginning, a guide to adopting a prepared life. So that will be coming out by the end of the month. I will announce it here. It'll be available as an ebook on Kobo for all of you to consume. So thank you very much. Take time. Enjoy yourself. Spring is almost here. Take care.